for August 21st, 2006. It's the Lullabot Podcast. Lullabot Podcast.
Isn't it August 22nd?
It is, actually. And, and probably this won't actually go out till 23rd. So we had a technical problem. We lost a podcast. We recorded it and it didn't work. So we're back again, but we've changed it up a little bit. Matt Westgate was not able to make it today. However, the new Lullabot, Robert Douglas from Bonn, Germany, is on the line with us here. Hello, Robert.
Hello, world.
You have such a thick German accent, sometimes I have a hard time understanding you.
I tried really hard to, you know, learn English and all of that the right way, but, well, no. I'm American, and yeah, I live in Bonn, Germany, and I'm glad to be a Lullabot. Glad to be on the show.
Well, we're glad to have you. Also on the line, we have...
Ted Serbinski.
And?
Angela Byron.
Yeah.
I got all formal there. Sorry.
Yeah.
Angie.
Yeah. Web chick.
Web chick.
Yeah, you go.
So, Robert, we should do a little, like, who is Robert Douglas? We never had a chance to do the Robert Douglas interview podcast, and now you're a Lullabot. So, you know, seems a little ringing our own bell to do a whole podcast with Robert. But we'll have you on podcasts and stuff like that. So you wrote... A Drupal book, yes?
I did, building online communities with Drupal and PHPB and WordPress, and I did the Drupal part of that and had the great honor of being the very first book ever to come out onto the shelves that was written about Drupal.
That's awesome. And, yeah, I know. I remember when that came out. It's a big deal. It's great and exciting. Still selling. It's an A-Press book, correct?
It's by A-Press, that's right. You can buy it either online at A-Press or on the other online sites like Amazon. Or you can go to A-Press and get an ebook version, which is a little bit cheaper and saves a tree.
Right. Not if you print it out, though. let's see, what else? You also, Robert, have been really integral in the... Summer of Code project.
That's right.
As has Angie, I guess, a little bit. You want to talk a little bit about that? We're going to do a full-on Summer of Code podcast maybe in a couple of weeks, talk about what happened there. But you want to talk a little bit about your involvement?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, it merits mentioning that Angie Webchick came to the Drupal project through Summer of Code 2005, where she was one of the star students who not only completed their projects, but did it with aplomb. And this year, Angie's been helping with the organization of Summer of Code, which is run by Google, and which grew dramatically. We had 14 students this year, and the projects that they're churning out are just absolutely fantastic. In fact, if any of our podcast listeners want to get their hands on this code, there's a post up right now on the front page of Drupal.org that lists all 14 projects, shows where to find the code, how to test it, and we'd like to invite everybody who's interested in these projects to dig in and try it out. Now, I'll just give you an idea of what you can find there. We've got projects that provide social network analysis for your website, so you can see who's who on your website and how they relate to the others and show the different paths between all the people and their comments and stuff like that. We've got an Ajax form creator where you can, in your web browser, move around your text fields, your text areas, your drop-down boxes, and in the end, press a magic button, and boom, you've got a Drupal form. We've got DrewTex, which brings the power of LaTeX to Drupal. We've got a collaborative editor. We've got importing, exporting API. We've got a Drupal manager, which lets you manage Drupal sites, multiple Drupal sites, in an XUL client in Firefox. It's so cool. You've got to try it out. So, yeah, come on by and check out the Summer of Code projects.
Wow, it's a lot of cool stuff. So, basically, Google puts up some money and sponsors some students to do some work. And if they do the work, they get the money.
That's basically it. Now, Google raised a lot of interest, controversy, and questions when they initiated this program last year. And basically, they do just that. They take a very large chunk of money. We're talking millions of dollars here. And they say to open source projects like Drupal, if you have people, students, college students, who want to work on your project for the summer instead of taking a summer job, we will pay you and the student. The student gets $4,500 US and the Drupal project gets $500 for every student. So by doing it this way, they basically delegate all of the responsibility of management for the individual projects and the vetting of the code to the projects. And they thereby enable a very large knowledge transfer from the veteran open source developers who are working on these projects to those students themselves. Or so that's the idea. In any case, everybody profits. Drupal profits because we've got these students coming in and writing wonderful modules. The students profit because they get exposure to open source and mentoring from veteran coders, money from Google, and let us not forget recognition. If you've written a module or some code as part of Google's program, that looks pretty good on your resume coming out of college. Now, people ask, what does Google get? I think Google gets a lot from this. They bolster interest in open source in general. They get a nice tax write-off, I'm sure. They get their finger in the pie somehow when it comes to seeing the up-and-coming trends in open source, and they also have a great recruitment vehicle in that they can call up basically anybody in the open source world and say, you know, we've been watching your work. Would you like to come work for Google? And you can see that they're doing that. They just hired a prominent Linux developer, for example.
Really? That's a good trick. I didn't realize that was happening. I thought we were the only ones who were hiring Summer of Code students. they took my trick.
You can sue them. No, I'm just kidding.
So
more lawyers.
So what else? Well, let's talk a little bit about news this week in the Drupal land of Drupal, as we try and do every week when we try and do our weekly podcast weekly. Anybody want to talk about recent commits to the head? Sure. There's been some crazy. I mean, it's just been
going nuts too.
Nutty nutness.
So in the last podcast, I was pleading people to check out my getridofdrupal.css patch, and that's actually went in. So now there is no more drupal.css. There's a bunch of different CSS files on a per-module basis. Still needs to be more cleanup, but for the most part, it's gone now, and you don't have to ever worry about getting rid of it again. So thanks for all the help for everyone that looked at that and for Dries for committing that. Or was it Neil? One of those two guys. I don't know.
Cool. There's been lots of other stuff, like...
Oh, geez. There was one that just went in today that adds access control to form elements, which is great because you can do things like, say, make a field on a form that's only visible to admins or something like that, like, say, a log message if you want to have an admin when they edit a node say, you know, this user is a dork or something. I don't know, you know, that kind of thing. But it's basically just one line of code to add that access control in there, and it opens up all kinds of possibilities for doing profile module-like control of fields with the form API.
Wow. So, like, I mean, I've always sort of been frustrated that basically, like, the whole – that block of, like, whether it's published, whether it's – in moderation, although moderation's going away in the next version and all that kind of stuff, is all under one access control kind of thing, right? I mean, like, it's administer nodes is the access permission for that. And so now it kind of can break that out individually. So you could give some people, like people, access to their the comment, like enabled, disabled kind of field, maybe to regular users, like that kind of thing?
Yeah, possibly. I'm not sure if it works on Render or not. I'll have to check into that, but it's a wicked patch. It does all kinds of cool, crazy stuff. So, but yeah, that's neat.
And the node body became an array last week. That's a big deal.
Yeah, apparently that I was talking with Jeff Eaton today. That ties in with the Axis patch. I don't know exactly how, but apparently you can not only control Axis at like the form, editing the form level, but actually displaying the node level too. I think there still needs to be some tweaking there, but that's pretty amazing because you can just write a little module and just change the completely how Drupal works for users with different access.
Wow. Huh. That's very cool. What else has been going on? Oh, I has everybody seen DrupalDigest.com? That's Moshe Weitzman put together a website where basically what he does is Moshe is very diligent about reading the developer mailing list. And wants to benefit people like me, who are not as diligent about reading the developer mailing list, by taking sort of the kind of good posts, important stuff, according to Moshe, subjectively important stuff, posting it up on a website where people can subscribe to an RSS feed and basically follow what's going on the development mailing list without necessarily needing to subscribe to all the messages and sift through them and stuff like that. And Angie, you're actually on there as a moderator as well for the documentation list. Is that true?
Yep. I'm the only developer who reads the documentation list. No, I'm just kidding. But so, yeah, I'm just going through. The documentation list has been a little light lately, but any posts that are good for other people to see, I just forward them on so people can take a look.
That's cool. Very cool. What else? Other news? Robert, you posted a module. I was looking through the new modules, and
actually two modules recently. Both of them to help us out with the MTV site. The first one was called the Embed Filter module, and well, what it does is basically it allows your site visitors to safely post these code snippets or tags that they get from other sites like YouTube or iFilm or NowPublic and safely post them in your website. Now, when I say safely, this means that they can't use this power to hijack your site in any way or upload their own flash file with, you know, political messages or whatever they have, whatever you don't want on your site. It sanitizes these things by making sure that they come from a site that you approve. So you can say, I only want these assets to come from YouTube or wherever. And they also look in for other things like cross-site scripting attacks. So if you are interested in having your site visitors submit YouTube or iFilm snippets, this is the module for you. Then the other module that I submitted was called Form Single. Here's an experiment for you. Everybody with a Drupal 4.7 site, dig it out, create a new node, a new blog, a new story, whatever. Type in, fill in all the fields, preview it, and then when you've got your mouse right over the submit button, just go crazy. Click it as many times as you can. Click it as fast as you can. See if you can click it 100 times before the page refreshes, and then look what happens. I bet you've got 100 blog posts on your site that all say the same thing. This is a fundamental bug in Drupal 4.7, and it will go on into 4.8 unless it's corrected. The Form Single module prevents this, and the task now is to get this code that I've written with the help of Angie into Drupal Core. I think it should apply to Drupal 4.7, and it should definitely go into the next release. So this is an open call to all developers out there. Look at the code that I've written and help us find a way to get this into Drupal Core.
And have fun clicking the mouse that much, because that's just a good feeling.
Drupal.org/node/79824 Form single module.
There you go. Cool. Well, we were going to answer some listener questions on this podcast, and let's do that. What do you say?
All right.
Let me get in here to the question. Incidentally, if you have questions, you, dear listener, have questions, you can call 877-LULLABOT. That's +1-877-585-5226, and you can call that from Skype. Skype out is free to the U.S., or you can call from Gizmo, which is cheap, or other VoIP things, or, you know, just pick up the phone. Let's see. Questions. All right, here's a question from a little bit ago that we haven't gotten to yet. Hold on.
Hello, guys. I have a question for your LULLABOT podcast. My name is Michael. I work for a nonprofit as well as a .edu in Vermont. I'm looking into setting up a blog server for both staff of the nonprofit as well as for students of the .edu. What I would like is basically a standalone blogging server with basic blog functionality, individual feeds, inline images, WYSIWYG text editor, nothing fancy, just a simple, straightforward blog server. I've looked at movable type, but it isn't really my first choice. WordPress multi-user isn't stable enough, and I haven't found many other blog servers out there that I like. I have plans to use Drupal elsewhere and would like to standardize on it as our CMS of choice. As long as the release doesn't take too long, I'm planning on using 4.7. What would your recommendations be on using Drupal as a blog server? What modules would you guys recommend I use, and what best practices should I keep in mind as I move forward with this project? Thanks, guys, really very much. I really appreciate the podcast, and keep up the good work.
Anybody want to take a shot at that one?
Well, 4.7 is out, and it's pretty stable.
We didn't get to this one right away, but the question still applies.
Well, Drupal has built-in multi-user blogging just as a core feature. You don't need any modules to do that. You just turn on the blog module, and you're done. Something that you might want to keep in mind is you should have some sort of a solution for handling spam if you allow anonymous comments. There's a bunch of different modules that will do that. Spam is one. CAPTCHA is another. It asks a little math question before you can post. Akismet is another one, I think. And I don't know much about that one, but it's been getting some press.
I know that we were corrected, that basically we talked about Akismet in one of the past podcasts, and what I do know is that we were wrong about it.
We were wrong? Okay.
Yeah. I don't know
it
what
has
the...
has something to do with spam, but I don't know what.
I don't know what the right answer is, but it's something about... It allows, is that the one that allows people, allows the robots to keep submitting it, thinking that they're submitting spam, but in fact it's just wasting their cycles?
That's what I understood of it, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe, I don't know. So, one day someone will answer this correctly. or we will do maybe, you know, 2 minutes of research and be able to speak eloquently.
Someday.
Yes, one day. Any other tips for this gentleman?
Sure. Well, he'll want something to fill the what you see is what you get editor gap. My recommendation for that is the Tiny MCE module, but there are others. What are they? There's the HTML editor.
HTML area, I think it's called. And FCK editor.
FCK, right. However, I think that the Tiny MCE editor has the advantage that it integrates relatively seamlessly with the image module. This is a hot topic in Drupal, and I'll be the first to admit it. The solutions aren't perfect, but the point is that with that module and the image module, you'll be able to upload images and put them in your blog posts, even if it means a little bit of training. But if
I really like MoxiCode, the people that make Tiny MCE put out Tiny MCE is a freeware thing. It's not GPL, so it's not actually included with the module, so you have to download it separately, although the module kind of guides you through the process. But MoxiCode has some a couple of really cool products that we've used on some sites. That's the image manager that actually doesn't do Drupal images the same way that the image module does in Drupal, or actually with Drupal. It's not part of Drupal core, the image module. But I really like that. It's a really nice integrated image manager. It's not free. It's like I think it's 40 euros for any site. And then also got a file manager for uploading things like PDFs and stuff like that. But using those, it's a really seamless, cool experience where basically you can upload an image right into your post. It's really slick, and well worth the 40 euros. And I believe, that, basically you just download the image manager and drop it in your directory for your TinyMCE module, and it'll recognize it and work with it. At least I wrote a patch for that at one point, and I don't remember what happened with it.
Another thing you can do too, if you aren't comfortable filling in web forms or your users aren't, Drupal also has a blog API module, so you can use a tool like Ecto or something like that to do your blog posting if people are more comfortable using a desktop application for that.
Cool. All right, let's move on to the next question.
Hey guys, this is Jeff. I really love the show. I just had a quick question about installing. Well, I've heard a lot of people talking about working on a installer similar to Civic Space and all. I was just curious, though. I've been installing Drupal 4.7 using the Fantastico installer, and I haven't had any trouble. And so I was just wondering about this project of the installer. If there's anything better than using Fantastico, because that seems to work really well for me. So, anyway, I really like the show. Keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, so this one's kind of a hot topic. there was recently a post on the front page of Drupal.org that was entitled, like, Fantastico, an insecure recipe for disaster. Because... Yes. Basically, the deal is that the maintainer of Fantastico has not been updating it, the version of Drupal installed in it, for subsequent versions of Drupal that have security releases that are critical. And there was kind of, it has something like 100 replies of people just kind of blasting some Fantastico because I guess it messes up updates and things like that. So it's worth a read if you use Fantastico, just to get different people's perspectives and stuff like that.
That's node 76488.
Ted, you're the node number man today.
Yeah, I like node numbers.
yeah, and so, I mean, so the problem is you're sort of putting a middle person in between you and Drupal. And so when there are Drupal security updates, they need to filter down into Fantastico. And then what's more, lots of times, at least as I understand it, Fantastico is one of these things that web hosts can install that allow their users to install different things, PHP, BB, Drupal, and other things like that. And who knows if and when they are doing their security updates of Fantastico, which needs to do the updates of Drupal. So, yeah, it'll be nice. Drupal will have its own installer, and it should work just as well as Fantastico, if not better.
Yeah, it's really easy. You just click and done. Sometimes I forget how easy it is. I'm like, oh, I have to set up another site to test, and I'm like, oh. It is easy.
Yeah, the new installer is very slick, so I'd give that a try and maybe see what you think.
Yeah. And so will the new installer do updates?
Well, Drupal, no, I don't think so. I don't know. It could. There's a week left of till the code freeze, folks.
So let's
get
see,
it
how,
in there. No.
How will it... So basically, you know, how an update would work, my understanding, is you'd basically download the update, replace your Drupal core files, and then run the update. There's just an update.php file that would change any database
right.
stuff.
And you wouldn't need an installer to do that because installer basically just creates your settings.php file and then creates your database for you.
Right.
So if you already have that and you're updating, you don't have to do that again.
Right. And basically just that update.php script would make any database changes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of already in there, kind of, depending on how you look at it.
No, it is in there. Yeah.
Cool. Let's move on to the next bit. We've got another question from Jeff. He called twice with two questions, so we'll play them both.
Hi, this is Jeff. I just had a quick question about the CCK module. I posted this question to the Drupal forums, and it's been over a week, and I haven't heard anything back on it. What I was wondering is, if I wanted to pull in, if I created a custom field, and instead of the options being a list, like a menu list, instead of typing the options in there, is it possible, does anyone know if it's possible to dynamically pull in some data, you know, from one of the database tables, or even dynamically pull in some text from an external text file or something like that? Is typing the field in there the only way to do that? The reason I'm wondering is I was just wondering if you could kind of cross-reference some of these fields. So, like, if somebody created a content type that was similar to categories, but it was something else, you know, some kind of thing that they're creating multiple items on a list, and then those become what populates a new field. So, anyway, I hope you understand my question. And if you could give any insight, I'd appreciate it. Thanks. Great podcast. Bye.
What a fantastic idea. I think that would be really nice to have. I don't think it's possible. Guys, am I wrong? It's not possible right now to do that, right?
No, I think it is.
It is?
Well, there's different ways to do it, but it's not easy. Or straightforward.
And of course, possible means what? Like writing a simple module that would do
right.
that.
So I would go, one avenue is write a simple form alter hook that basically goes in and takes that field, whatever it is, and queries the database and generates a list. So that would, I think that would be one way to do that, as long as you set up your CCK to not be restricted to certain values. So you could have a create... take the selects box and pre-populate it with a bunch of values. That wouldn't be too hard to do that.
I wonder if the computed fields module that just got contributed would be a good fit
yeah.
for this as well.
That was the other one. That's at node/74767. I think that's another good one, because instead of using the form alter, you can actually go into the CCK field type itself and say, just put in your PHP code to run the query. I don't think you can get around this without actually doing PHP code, though. You're not
right.
going to be able to point and click.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's not anything that does this like out of the box yet. But, you know, all of the functions are there and the features are there in the Drupal API to write a module that would do this kind of thing relatively easily.
Here's how you would word the feature request on CCK or on computed field. You would say, please make me a widget that renders a computed field as a select, as a drop-down menu.
Is that really what he wants? But is he solving this problem with a he's asking for something that calls in from a text file. But of course, does he really want a text file, or does he actually just figure he can get something else out into a text file and then read stuff back in from the text file to other places and stuff? I guess it sort of depends on the needs.
Yeah, I interpret it as like he has a database table with a list of all the countries in the world, and he wants to pre-populate that into a CCK field without having to type them in.
Right, or like come up with sort of a template kind of a thing. Yeah, I don't
right.
know.
Well, I heard the salient word being dynamic, so that the list could change in time as well.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess we'd actually need to really see the thing, but definitely the kinds of things that he's talking about are possible, but probably not possible without actually doing a little bit of code. All right, let's see the next one here.
Hi, guys. My name is Roland. I have a question. I'm trying to build a site for my motorcycle club, and I was just wondering if Drupal will work for me. like to have the forums, galleries, maybe something for each member in a club to have their own personal page that maybe they can edit and maybe, you know, put files and something like a maybe a daily blog for them. Thanks.
Well, that's pretty basic Drupal functionality, right? I mean, this is sort of why Drupal exists, is this sort of community blogging feature kind of stuff and people, you know, being able to have their own areas of the site. I mean, you might want to look into things like organic groups, if you had different types of groups and stuff like that, but, you know, where there could be sort of a group blog, I guess, kind of thing. But ultimately, I mean, this is pretty basic Drupal stuff, yes?
Yeah, I think it's just getting the right collection of modules together to basically develop that. There are, like, little catches here and there, but for the most part, I think Drupal itself plus organic groups plus what else, guys?
Image.
Ones.
Image,
yeah. Yeah.
Image module. Don't forget to download image module. That's one of those, why isn't this in core kind of modules? And then, I kind of know why it's not in core.
But, and then views module to generate maybe like image galleries,
yeah,
or show lists of content or list of new members or however you like to do that.
Yep, that's a good way to go. But yeah, you can do pretty well just right off the bat, kind of start messing with Drupal and put this kind of stuff together pretty easy. So cool.
So go for it. Go for it. The world doesn't have enough motorcycle club sites. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Here, well, we've got one more here, and this is.
Hey guys, how's it going? This is Dave Hanson Lang from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Great podcast. It's really helping me out a lot. I just have one suggestion / question. On the Leo Laporte interview, I think Matt, you mentioned something about how you're running the 4.7 branch and it's updated daily. So I'm guessing you're running some sort of cron script to update the CVS. And my question is, do you also do that with the contrib modules too? And if so, I'm guessing you have some sort of shell script that does something, like iterates through all the directories in the modules directory, and how that whole works, or, I don't know, maybe do something completely different. Anyway, just thought I'd ask that question and say hi, and thanks a lot. Okay, take care.
I think there was a little bit of misunderstood what we were saying on the podcast. For the podcast, we were talking about Drupal itself. Everything is under CVS, which is Concurrent Versioning System. And that's how you keep track of Drupal 4.6, Drupal 4.7, Drupal 4.8, and so forth. And every day there are updates to various branches. Usually it's just the next version of Drupal. But sometimes there's like bug fixes that get back into 4.7 and 4.6. So the way we set up Twit is we've checked out Drupal, the CVS version of 4.7. So as these updates, as 4.7 continually gets updated from 4.7.2 to 4.7.3 to 4.7.4 to 4.7.5, we just pull in those updates every couple days without actually having to wait for an official release. So we can get those bug fixes early.
So what you're saying is there's like in-between versions that don't actually get a version number, but if you do
right.
A CVS update, you'll actually get the little in-between changes that might
exactly.
not have actually gotten marked as 4.7.3 yet.
You could download 4.7.3 now, but there's actually a 4.7.4 version ready with like maybe half a dozen fixes already in it. Nothing critical. If it was critical, it would have been already released, but these are just like little nice-to-haves. So that's why we update it every now and then when it seems to fix a bug or something we've been running into.
Manually, not with a cron script, right?
But we're not running a cron script because some of those fixes could be problematic, and we'd like
exactly.
to know, at least, you know, running a cron script on a live site like that, you could potentially log in one morning and the site doesn't work and you don't know why or what happened. And so you really want to pull the trigger on doing
a
CVS
break my
update.
Sites by hand.
Yeah, exactly. You really, that's one of those things you want to do yourself. You want to
right.
break your own site.
and you want to always have a test site so that you can pull the trigger on a site that has the identical configuration, either on your local computer or if you're really fancy, you have a whole separate server for this, but and see what it breaks there before you move it to the one that everybody's looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but we actually have run, I mean, it is possible to get a cron script going that does a CVS update or an SVN update or that kind of thing. And we've done that some on our development servers, not actually updating from Drupal, but in our own internal SVN system. Subversion is SVN. It's a versioning system similar to CVS, but a little more modern. It is possible, and you don't even really necessarily need to do any special like recursive scripts or anything like that. I think that there's just a command to automatically do recursive within the CVS command or something. It's a little bit tricky to get it working from cron, but it is possible. And my trick to getting that to work is to have Angie do it.
I charge $200 an hour. No, I'm just
kidding. Set up a cron job.
Just a cron job.
It's well worth the money not to have to deal with command line scripts myself. So, yeah, like I said at the beginning, if you have questions, call 877-LULABOT. That's 877-585-5226, and we'll get around to answering them either a one-off on some special podcast, or we'll do a special podcast where we answer all the questions that we have all queued up.
Or we'll wait till later this winter when we're retired.
Yes.
Have nothing else to do.
In the dead of winter. So, yeah, and we talked about doing maybe something a little more in-depth, talking about CVS and how CVS works, podcast maybe in the future, and stuff like that. And at some point, actually, we're coming up on the code freeze, right? Was September 1st, so we can talk about sort of what got in and what didn't and stuff like that. So stay tuned to future podcasts. You know what we didn't talk about at the beginning of this podcast? This is podcast number 20.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Talking about milestones, I missed submitting node 80,000.
Yeah, I just saw that.
On Drupal.org. We've surpassed 80,000 nodes, and within a couple of days, we're going to have 80,000 users as well.
80,000 nodes? Boy, that makes 20 podcasts not sound so good.
Yeah, we got a long way to go.
Good job, Jeff.
Thanks,
good job.
Thanks, Robert. Gee.
Well, the next one, we can just say the next one's like episode 100,000.
Yeah.
We skipped a little bit.
Yeah, sure. We can make up whatever number we want. We'll just keep, it'll be whatever the current Drupal next node is.
Yeah.
That's pretty geeky right there. Plus so, anyways, one. We're going to call this one a podcast, and we'll see you next quote unquote week on the Lullabot Drupal podcast. Bye bye.
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 Bye.